magical place we could go. So close your eyes and make a wish for the skies with the angriest, flappiest birds, and the seas with ridiculous fish. The Dutch Arcade Show is here again. It's Friday night and I'm with my friends, Eli, Jerry, and Mike most of the time. Come on, let's go to the Dutch Arcade Show.
To the Touch Arcade Show. This is episode number 352, recording on April 27th, 2018. I'm Eli. With me is Jared. And between the two of us, we've got about 20 years of experience covering mobile games on TouchArcade.com, which is the coolest place to go for all your mobile gaming related news, reviews, hot takes, other things along those lines. Let's see, so we have a we got a Twitch channel at twitch.tv/TouchArcade. We've got a really active Discord at discord.gg/TouchArcade, which is a great place to go to talk mobile games with other people. This podcast, as well as the website itself, both primarily supported by Patreon, which you can find at patreon.com/TouchArcade. If you're not into the Patreon thing, totally get it. But you still like what we do, we'd love it if you would do your Amazon shopping through toucharcade.com/Amazon. That link should work for all regions of the world right now.
Word.
I think that's a recent development I've been working on. So, because before it was just like US only and everyone else was nothing. So, kind of weird how Amazon has you sign up for the affiliate program in each region, of which there are many. So, whatever. We appreciate iTunes reviews of any kind, good or bad. And if you want to send us an email, it's podcast@toucharcade.com. And with that out of the way, we can get the show on the road here. Anything cool going on these days?
Pam is going to run a marathon tomorrow.
A marathon marathon?
Half marathon, sorry. The one that's like 13 miles or whatever.
Wow.
So, yeah, we're going to go do that.
Yeah. That's, are you both doing that, or are you just going to
watch? Oh, God, no. No, no, no. I'll go watch.
I feel like you could at least walk in support, right?
You can't, actually. There's a time limit.
Oh, there's a time limit?
If you don't finish in time, they just stop you.
That would be embarrassing, I think.
That would be me.
To be like, yeah, I paid to enter the marathon, and they politely asked me to just stop.
Well, Pam's been training for months for this and has gotten a lot better, but she's not as good as the friends she's been running with. And so she's a little nervous that even at her best, she might not finish in time. But I think she'll pull it out. I feel like when you're in the moment, it's a lot different than when you're like training and stuff. And you'll kind of know like if time's winding down, how far away you are, if you need to kick it up a notch or something like that. So I don't know. It'll be interesting. Never done anything like this before.
Yeah. So we got... got two emails. One's super long, so I need to read that later. But the other one is from Ben, who, and again, if you want to email us, it's podcast@toucharcade.com. He caught something noteworthy that we didn't really cover because, I don't know, I never really get a feel for like how much our readers are really kind of into the kind of industry drama of the App Store and stuff. But basically, he dropped us a note to say that Matt Casamassina, who was the old editorial manager, editorial director for Games in the Apps, I don't remember what exactly his title was, but basically the dude in charge of games on the App Store, recently left to join, I don't know if you pronounce it DOD Media Group or DOD Media Group or whatever. But that's the thing that happened. The App Store lost their main games guy. Which is kind of interesting.
Well, I don't know. They'll be all right. They can just keep reading Touch Arcade and featuring the games that we feature.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, I don't really know a whole lot about this other than there's a lot of these like consulting companies out there. It's kind of annoying because I feel like we could have spun off into something that does something like this and probably make way more money now and not be doing the whole Patreon thing. But like, basically, what these companies do is. They find like Asian developers primarily and people that don't know a whole lot about launching a game, but like have the team and infrastructure and resources to launch a game. and they'll go in and be like, yo, here's all the things that are messed up with your game that you should fix. Here's who you talk to at Apple. Like, here's what you say. Here's your app description. Like, you know, basically all this stuff to effectively like interface with Apple. And like a lot of times these places will also like help you with like tweaking your monetization numbers and with your soft launch and things like that. Just basically to make sure that your game does well when it launches. And the business model these places operate under is pretty crazy, because they take like, and this is typical, you know, obviously every deal is different with every game, but like a lot of these places take a percentage of like the overall proceeds of a game. So like if you like grab a client that has a game and it does well and the game makes like millions, like you could like like I know people doing this right now that are really, really irritatingly rich. So I don't know. As far as what it means for the App Store, a lot of people are suspecting that Mark Bozon, who's the kind of like, I think that was Matt's right-hand man or whatever, is going to take over with the App Store. But as far as game stuff is concerned, but I don't know. It's I don't know if that's going to affect basically anything that has anything to do with stuff.
I think at this point, especially with the redesign of the App Store and stuff, they've got their process down so that if somebody's leaving, somebody else is there that's going to know what to do, you know. But it's interesting.
Yeah. So I've heard rumors that a lot of people, like a lot of the old guard of the App Store, are not super satisfied with the new App Store. So it wouldn't surprise me if other people have left or are leaving, and Matt's just like one of the more high profile ones that, you know, was actually kind of newsworthy when he left, as opposed to just, you know, someone else on the game's editorial team that you probably never heard of.
Am I dumb that I've never heard of any of these people?
I don't know, maybe. But yeah, so that is, I don't know, kind of a non-story. I mean, the App Store will continue to exist, you know. Right. Maybe there'll be a different direction featuring, but I kind of doubt it. It just kind of sucks for people that might have had like a really good relationship with Matt, or like people that work under him that now are like, shit, who do we brown nose now to get a game featured? So yeah, if you're not in that group of people, I would say this probably is completely meaningless to you. So as far as the news of the week, we can run through some of that stuff real quick. I actually had kind of an interesting Nintendo story that popped up. I guess this would have been like last night, U.S. time.
Yeah.
Right? Because they released all their financial stuff. Fire Emblem Heroes is ripping it up, which I guess shouldn't really surprise anyone too much. I like the slides that they put out are like so meaningless. It's ridiculous. Like the like they show these like charts of like how many downloads the game have gotten, and the y-axis is labeled many to few. So judging,
but the chart goes up, so it's good, right?
Judging by these charts, Fire Emblem Heroes has gone from, I wouldn't say quite, I would say about halfway between few to many, starting in July, and now in March is skewing really towards many on the chart. So if you're curious if the net sales are few or many on Fire Emblem, they're trending towards many. Somewhat similarly, the Super Mario Run download count, let's just say it started close to many, and they're edging close to the theoretical maximum of the many graph. In fact, I would almost say that looking at this image, March of this year is capping out the many. I don't know how they
go
higher.
They're going to upgrade to very many.
Very many. That would be the next one they put out. So I don't know. Interesting as far as stats are concerned. So Super Mario Run, I guess, is boasting a monthly active player base of 20 million people, which is higher than I kind of expected. Super Mario Kart Tour is still scheduled you know, between now and this time next year basically for release. Kind of demographic stuff got mentioned, which is kind of obvious in that, you know, like Animal Crossing Pocket Camp is the majority of his player base is adult women, which, you know, that's not super surprising because that's a huge demographic in mobile gaming anyway, and the iteration of mobile Animal Crossing that we got, I feel like, appeals way more to female gamers than anyone else.
There's definitely a lot of girls out there that love Animal Crossing.
I've noticed.
And men too. It's a bothy thing, but
yeah. So I don't know. You know, it's just kind of. It's always interesting the hype surrounding these like Nintendo financial reports. And it seems like everyone thinks that like they're gonna drop some huge bomb on them, but it's basically always every time they do this, it's like all the games are doing well. We got new stuff coming out. You already knew about. It's coming in the future. See ya.
How dare you not announce a new Mario game at your financial meeting?
Yeah, no shit. Well, I mean, Apple, people always have that reaction towards when Apple does their financial calls, like the comments on Mac rumors will be like, WTF, Apple, where's the AR goggles? Where's the new iMac?
They should do that one time. They should be like, all right, here's our numbers. We did really well. And, oh, by the way, the iPhone 15 is looking hot.
Yeah. Or, no, it would be better. I think it would be more hilarious if they, like, specifically... announced a product to target like the Mac Rumors crew. Like they've always wanted like a highly upgradable Apple tower computer that like people refer to as the X-Mac, you know? So yeah, that'd be hilarious. It'd be like, all right, yeah, here's our numbers. App stores, you know, 70% of our revenue. The X-Mac is launching in 2 weeks.
Blow everyone's mind.
That would be amazing. So yeah, you know, kind of non-news with Nintendo other than things are coming, business is going good, which I guess is kind of a good sign. I don't know. So the Hearthstone Monster Hunt mode that we've kind of mentioned in the past is now live. So if you aren't tuned into this, basically what they've done over, it started with the last expansion. They released a single player mode called Dungeon Run, which I really enjoyed. That was my favorite part about the last expansion because you... didn't need any of your own cards. You just like played against AI, and it was kind of like a randomized sort of dungeon crawling spin on the card game. And so it's been kind of interesting watching the reaction to Monster Hunt because people are like, this is just like Dungeon Run. What WTF, Blizz? It's like, yeah, that was the whole idea. Everyone loved Dungeon Run, so they did a new spin on it with the new expansion. Yeah. Like, what the fuck do you expect? So yeah, the Dungeon Run stuff, or I'm sorry, the Monster Hunt, the unique spin on this is that there's four unique heroes that you play as. Each have their own kind of unique deck and play style and challenges that they go through. So there's a little bit less content than the Dungeon Run stuff previously, but the content feels more unique to me. Versus like last time around, it was like, all right, yeah, I can play the nine classes and each of them has a deck that... is very much like playing a paladin deck or whatever else. Whereas these guys are like totally unique stuff that's balanced in a way that would be like completely broken outside of this game mode. But I think that makes it really fun. So, and that's totally available for free for everyone. Like you can just go in and play that. Like you download Hearthstone today. You might need to play through the tutorial to like get to the point where you can select it. But after that, like you don't need any cards. You don't need anything. You just hop right in. Which I think is really cool. And I really wish that they would do more content like this more often, but, you know, I guess it is what it is. They're in the business of selling packs, not giving away free single-player junk. So you posted this story for Homo Machina coming on the 17th. This looks really cool. It's, I don't know, it's another Go game, though, right? I
mean, no.
It looks...
You're thinking of Vandals.
Oh, yeah.
No, this is, and I believe it's pronounced Homo Machina.
Oh,
but
I don't know. I can barely read, so.
it's based off of this scientist named Fritz Kahn, who like in the early 1900s, mid-century time, came up with the illustrations of the human body that were like, you know, it's like a little factory with people running it inside you, you know, like moving your jaw to eat food and stuff like
that.
Oh,
it's the same developer as Vandals.
Or same publisher. But so anyway, it's like basically they got the rights from the Kahn estate from the scientists whose illustrations are super famous. And so they kind of got the blessing to use his actual, you know, art style and artwork and actual illustrations to make sort of a moving game. And so it's sort of an adventure game. It's kind of like you're gonna poke and prod at all the little things inside the little human body machine. And to get the, you know, to work the human or whatever. And then you follow this guy through an entire day, and it happens to be the day that he's going on a very first date with somebody. So it's sort of like a nerve-wracking day. And you're going to control the body from within via tiny scientists.
And, oh, man. So
mechanical stuff.
This is really bad, but I didn't even realize that we saw us at GDC. Like, that's how busy we were.
No, yeah, we saw it with, they showed Vandals and this at the same time.
Well, no, but, like, remember we were so split up with stuff that, like, you probably couldn't name anything that I saw. You know,
Still probably need to go back and see some of the games you posted, because, we were so slammed, it was hard to see what each other were doing.
I definitely remember, like, looking at the GDC coverage I did, I definitely remember them, like, writing Touch Arcade in the spray paint, though.
Yeah.
And being like, oh, that's cool, and then got back to what I was doing.
But anyway, this seems to be, I mean, there will be a story to go along with it and stuff, but it also seems to sort of be one of those digital toy things where there's going to be a lot of, like, animated, interactive elements that either do or don't have anything purposeful to do. So it's kind of like that game Windowsill or the other Vector Park games where it's sort of like a digital toy that you can kind of just play around with and stuff. But there will also be gamey stuff happening and a story to follow. But looks super cool. It got accidentally released last week, so a few people actually downloaded it. And then
Was it a full accidental release?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, just came out. And I was like, oh, I'm going to grab that. That's a weird... They didn't email me or anything, and then it was an accident.
I was retelling the story of... I don't even remember how I got talking. I was talking to another developer about something unrelated and got onto the story about that the game from the Plunderland developers. Remember that release fiasco?
Yeah.
Where it was like the broken game came out. And I don't know. Well, but irrelevant. But yeah, that's cool. This game looks really neat. I'm excited to play it. So
yeah.
Coming out on the 17th. So if you are one of the people that listen to this podcast and read Touch Arcade but have an Android device or an Android device and an iPad, which seems kind of common, or I guess the other way around, actually, maybe iPhone and Android tablet or whatever, Noodlecake has released their port of Getting Over It with Bennett Foddy, $5.
This game.
Or wait, is it, how much is it on Google Play? Let's see.
I think it's $5.
It is $5. So it's interesting... I need to hit up the Noodlecake guys and see where they actually ended up on this, because if you go to Google Play and you type Getting Over It, they're not even the first one that comes up.
No, I believe it.
There's another game that comes up. There's the first one that comes up is called Getting It with Robinson. Why that shows up first instead of like
Getting It.
Specifically searching for Getting Over It. I don't get it. The one after that is Hammer Man Get Over This is the title of the game, which looks like they completely stole the game and really released it. The next one is Climby Hammer, which is pretty good. And then the one after that is called Getting Over It PvP, and the icon is Deadpool.
Yeah, Android.
So yeah, that's Google Play for you. But yeah, Getting Over It's a really fun game. If you haven't played it before, it's I would say it is the pinnacle of the awkward physics game.
Yeah.
Like the intentionally janky and awkward physics game, and like the whole gimmick of it is you're like sitting in a cauldron, right? You're like a guy sitting in a cauldron.
Yeah.
And you have this hammer.
Yeah.
And you like the way you control the game and move around is the only input you have is moving the head of the hammer, basically.
Yeah.
To swing it around. And you got to like grab junk with the hammer and like fling yourself up over things. And
it's so silly trying to explain it in words.
Yeah. But it's really good though. And the game is structured in a way where you're like, there's like when you fall, like you fall a long, long way.
You can lose literally hours of progress in like a half a second.
Yeah. And it's, I don't know. This sounds terrible, but it all goes together. And there's like a just constant voiceover is kind of like taunting you the entire time. And I don't know. It's a really unique game. Really good. I don't care what platform.
I always thought so that's Bennett Foddy that's like doing the narration or whatever. And I always thought it was super like serial killer stuff where it's like, oh, it's okay, I see that you've lost a lot of progress, but it's okay, everything's gonna be fine, pain is a part of life and all this stuff. And I'm like, is this like some Dexter dude that's about to like murder me in a kill room or something?
Yeah, it's something.
Anyway, I love that game.
Yeah, highly. I don't care if you play it on Steam or iOS or Android, just as long as you play it, it's a really, really cool game. You can also watch, there's a ton of YouTube content of people like getting really far and falling and
Or look up some of the speed runs. They're
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I got turned on to that in a rabbit
Dude.
hole surrounding
Yeah.
one of these and was like, what the, how is this even possible?
I
Because
don't get it.
like you really have to play the game to appreciate like just how crazy those speed runs are, because like when you watch a video of it, you're like, I don't know, this looks really easy and dumb. Like, I don't see what the big deal is, but like it's a lot like, and I'm sure everyone listening has probably played a game where it's like the controls are just like abstracted enough that it's awkward and really weird, and that's like part of the gameplay. So once you experience that and you watch these videos where people are like flying through the game in like minutes, it's like watching, it's like the part of the Matrix where like Neo learns how to fly, basically. And you're
Yeah.
like, oh my God, everything is different from here on out now
Or
that I've
like
seen this.
if you took apart a Jenga tower in 5 seconds without spilling anything, like that's what those speed runs are. I'm like, that's not even possible.
Let's see. Next thing I got on my list is just real quick, Goblin Sword is updated with iPhone 10 support. This is a really, 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 really good kind of like action platformer. It's from 2014, so it doesn't really have a lot of the, well, it has none of the freemium shenanigans, right? It's a
No, I don't even think. Yeah, the content updates have all been free too. They've added a ton of content to it, and so it's a $2 game. It's incredible value.
Like seriously stupid value for the money. So if you've had it in your purchase history and just forgot about it, I would check it out again. If not, and you're pining for the good old days of iOS games where you just paid a couple dollars and got a ridiculous amount of content, search the App Store for Goblin
Like,
Sword.
I feel like these iPhone 10 updates are, they've become excuses for me to replay old games that I
Oh
love. And like,
yeah, for
this is a
sure.
super good example of that.
Well, because a lot of these games too didn't get updated for the previous screen aspect
Yeah,
ratio, you know?
this
So
one
it's
was
like,
safe, but a few have out there have been that way where it was like they were dead with the 32-bit stuff, but then not only did they come back, but they come back with iPhone 10 stuff, and it's like, oh, cool, I can't
yeah.
wait to play this.
Or they were 64-bit with the wrong aspect ratio on the screen, or like other, you know, other layers of jank just slowly getting broken with iOS updates. So it's been really cool to see these old games come back to life like that. So Mini Metro got three new maps, which are really just kind of twists on the old maps. So the three maps are London in 1960, New York City in 1972, and Paris in 1937. But you know, it's the same basic idea of Mini Metro, just kind of like a different spin on things. So if you've ever played Mini Metro, it's a game where you're like effectively building a subway map, more or less. Or I guess it doesn't need to be a subway, but like that, it reminds like the graphics look and feel like look like you're looking at you know, the super simplified like line map of a subway. And it's really cool. Like you, I think the, I don't know if I would say the PC version might be a little bit better on iOS than iOS, just because like there's a lot of stuff that you do with like taps and hold and stuff that I think on the PC you just do by right clicking, which seem a little bit more intuitive than, there's a definite learning curve as you learn like the weird UI.
I think it ends up working well once you know it all, but it takes a minute to get there as opposed to just knowing what to do. But
Yeah, because the first time I played this, like I definitely was pretty frustrated trying to figure out like how to move train cards from lines and like how to do all this other stuff that should be super easy. And but I don't know, still really good game for $5. Now I understand that it's in my rotation of shit that I play all the time. So as far as what's next? Oh, so the Ancients AR looks pretty cool. So that's coming middle of next month, May 15th. This seems pretty neat. I don't know. Like I still think the AR is a huge gimmick, right? But this one actually does stuff that's kind of sort of interesting.
Well, I sort of framed it as this seems like probably more of a gimmick again, but it's a cool gimmick. And so when you look at the game itself, because it'll have non-AR modes. Like you don't have to play it in AR or anything like that, like some of the ones out there. This will be a full game, and you could just ignore the AR stuff if you want. But the game itself is a real-time strategy game that takes place in the sea, and there's these three kingdoms that are always fighting, and so you're pretty much commanding a bunch of warships and trying to, battle out against the other kingdoms, and it's a, a real-time strategy sort of game. But the sort of hook of this game is that there's these giant sea creatures that kind of live amongst you, and you have the power to like call them and have them you know, battle for you. It's sort of like the summons in like Final Fantasy or something like that. And so out of nowhere, you'll get this giant creature coming out of the water and, you know, beat up on your enemies for you and stuff like that. So the AR stuff comes into play where you can sort of project that into the real world. And so their example is like they're actually at the ocean and you're, you know, viewing the game through an iPhone, you know, screen. And all of a sudden, like a giant creature comes out of the real life water or whatever.
Yeah.
And so it's, I don't see how that's going to add anything to the game itself, but I think
it's just a cool video.
Yeah. Like, it's a really cool video. I've always wanted to see something like that happen. So
I kind of suspect a lot of stuff like this is more just because like, I like our reaction to this video is like, oh, holy shit, that's really cool. And I'm sure like when they sent all this stuff over to like Apple for featuring, like they had a similar reaction, right? Even though it's like, I don't know, is anyone, of the people that download this game, how many people are going to be like, oh, I got to go to the beach to see this summon?
Right.
You know?
I don't know. I mean, I guess you could summon a monster out of, like, your toilet or something and just have fun with stuff like that. But it does seem more gimmicky than anything, at least based on what I know now. Maybe that's not true. But I don't know. It's cool. There's very few AR games that I feel like, oh, this could only work in AR. You know what I mean? The rest of it's just sort of like, oh, it's the same game with the real world behind it. Cool.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's my concern with these kind of things always is I don't want people to get burnt out on AR as like, oh, this is just a silly gimmick. Like, I don't care about the AR side of things because I feel like it has like a lot of potential.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I think if everyone kind of gets turned off of AR because like most of the features are kind of stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Like by the time the AR is actually really good, like people might just be like, I don't care about this. Like it's like I've done AR before. It's dumb.
Yeah, it really needs sort of a killer app, which you could argue it already has with Pokemon Go. But
I wouldn't even say it's an AR game, though.
Most people don't even use the AR in that game.
I mean, but, it uses less battery if you turn off the AR stuff. So like,
yeah, which kind of defeats the purpose. But until there's like something that's like a really mainstream, holy crap, this is only something you can do in AR and it wouldn't be the same game without it and everybody's super into it, I don't think we're even going to hit that point.
Yeah. Well, so the closest thing that I've ever seen that was pretty cool was, and I don't even know if this feature is still in Yelp, but they have this thing called Yelp Lens.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know how to trigger this anymore or if it's still even...
That was always like the demo of augmented reality for years now has been like, oh, you hold your phone up and it'll tell you all the places of interest, it's blah, blah, blah. Oh, is it? I've never even used that myself.
It's super, super jerky, though. It doesn't look like it's using the new AR kit stuff because the new AR kit stuff is like locked on.
It's probably not because it's probably a feature no one really uses. But
yeah.
I feel like that sort of implementation would be something that would be super mainstream and everyone would, you know, start using and then, you know, years from now be like, how do we ever live without that sort of thing?
Yeah. So the dream with Yelp Monocle, if you never fiddled around with it, and I don't know how many people would because it's very buried in the Yelp thing, but Yelp app, but it's an augmented reality thing where you would like hold your phone up and look through it and see like, oh, that's the business name and here's the rating kind of thing underneath it, which I thought like that kind of stuff seems way more what the actual like killer app of AR is going to be. Like if you had, you know, like imagine being at GDC and you had just like, you know, AR glasses or however we actually end up, you know, getting this view, but like, you know, we're at our party or whatever, and you see like, oh, this is a developer, like this is the game they made, like here's their name, kind of thing. Like that would be unbelievably useful. That would be like a complete game changer for someone like me that's absolutely horrible with names.
Yeah.
But yeah, I hope that people stick along for that to get that cool and not give up on it because they don't care about summoning titans from the ocean and everything else is similar. Kind of usefulness this, levels.
I don't know how this is only somewhat related, but it made me think of it. But if you're like a Wikipedia nerd, which I super am, there's this app called V for Wikipedia. Have you ever heard of that?
How do you spell it? Like V as
V like Victor, for Wikipedia. And
I'll download
It's $6. It's $6. Anyway, it's like pretty much the ultimate Wikipedia experience. It lets you like save offline, you know, articles and blah, blah, blah. But anyway, one of the coolest features and the thing that actually drew me to it is that you can open it up and then it'll find nearby things around you on Wikipedia or whatever. And so I was like, what's this about? And like the interface for it and everything is super well done and really easy to use and stuff. But anyway, so I fired it up at my home.
This is neat.
And was like, holy crap, like there is a ton of hits around me. And like I was thinking, like, there's nothing like that interesting around me. And I started looking through the articles and it was like, holy crap, this old house in this neighborhood is historic for some reason. And then this fountain in front of this business is some other historic blah, blah, blah. And I started discovering all these crazy things. And then I'm starting to scroll around the map and just pick points around my city to see what it finds around that location. And just started discovering crazy amounts of stuff. And so,
yeah. Oh, yeah. Wow, like, this is really neat. There's a lot of stuff in my area.
Yeah, it's, you wouldn't think there is. And then there is. And it's all this, like, really interesting stuff. And so, I don't know. I'm the kind of person that will, like, read Wikipedia for hours just going down crazy rabbit holes. And so, somebody had recommended this years ago as a really good Wikipedia
really cool.
app. So, if you like that sort of stuff,
yeah, this
it
is
out.
Neat. Like, there's this building by my house that's, like, one of the things that pops up. And it's just, like, one of those things I drive by and I'm like, oh, that looks neat.
Yeah, but it has some story about it.
You know?
Yeah, it's so cool.
Huh. Yeah, that's neat. All right, so V for Wikipedia. Or I just V
I
for Wiki.
V.
Oh, yeah, it's V for Wikipedia. That's the full name. So, yeah, really, that's really cool. I wish I would have used that when I was in Japan. That'd be neat.
Yeah.
Anyway, so what is next on my list? There's a whole ton of Fortnite crap that happened this week, which Fortnite being the biggest game on the planet.
Yeah.
Through a factor of several right now. Let's see. There's a new kind of grenade called the Clinger. It's, you know, just sticks to a wall kind of thing, you know, like a claymore almost, I guess. One of the big features that people have been requesting for a while now is tap to fire, and that has been added. It's like before, I don't know, the fire system was really strange before. That was like one of the things that kind of made me not really like the mobile version.
Mm-hmm.
The game's coming to China.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's in partly with the help of Tencent, which is, again, not super surprising. One thing that happened, or one story that seemed kind of interesting is that there's a story out of, city was this? Let's see. Cleveland's Ashland University is offering Fortnite scholarships.
Cool.
Of up to $4,000, which I mean, I guess for I think Cleveland Ashland University is a I don't know if it's a community college or what, but I mean, $4,000 might go pretty far for the small state school. I don't know.
Yeah, I what I'm curious about with this is that we sort of saw this happen with PUBG, where it was like, this is the hottest thing on the planet. It broke every Steam record, blah, 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 blah. And then, you know, within 3 months, it was like, I mean, it's still popular, but like Fortnite's taking it over. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
And so my feeling keeps being like, okay, well, what's the next thing that's going to take that over? And I feel like while these might sort of level off and have kind of long-term fan bases that keep playing the games, you know, for years or whatever, I feel like the it's the hottest thing in the world can only last so long for anything. And so I'm sort of waiting for that shoe to drop with Fortnite. And then at that point, it's like, what are you going to do if you're a college that's got given someone like a 4-year scholarship or something like that that is based around this game that's not as popular as it once was?
Yeah, I don't know. Like it's hard to imagine Fortnite kind of faltering at this point because it seems like it's become like the new Minecraft almost overnight.
Yeah, but I don't know.
Are
there Minecraft?
I mean, I think that Fortnite, well, so I think that like PUBG was the biggest thing ever. Then Fortnite came along and just had a way broader appeal.
Because mm-hmm.
Like my friends and I still play PUBG because we kind of prefer like the more gritty sort of military style, like hardcore game. Whereas Fortnite is more of a, you know, like action cartoony almost kind of thing.
I think that's true. I think there's definitely two sort of different audiences and two different styles of game. But, I don't know. I do still feel like it's not going to be the most popular thing on Earth forever.
Well, no, I mean, that's true of anything, but I don't know. We'll see. I think that what gave Minecraft the legs that it had for so long was that game was basically a sandbox for all sorts of stuff, like not only playing inside the game, but also modding it for different game modes and all that shit. And so if Epic makes any kind of misstep, I think, where they give people a chance to get bored of the game,
yeah,
and that's when Fortnite's going to falter, I think. Otherwise, because like, if you're into Minecraft and you take advantage of the community stuff and all that, like It is very difficult for you to get in a situation where you're like, I think I've done everything there is to do in Minecraft. I'm kind of bored of this, you know?
Yeah.
Like that rabbit hole, rabbit hole is endless. And that, I don't know if that's necessarily the case with Fortnite. So we'll see. But I read a story before we started recording that they, was it $223 million or something like that? Yeah. $223 million in March, up 73% from February. So it's like, I feel like this game has really yet to hit its ceiling with that kind of increase. I mean, that's just bananas. It's like everyone I know is playing this right now. Like even people that are really like non-gamers are now into what I find to be a fairly hardcore battle royale thing, which is, you know, whatever. So let's see, kind of interesting news out of Magic the Gathering Arena this week. They released how the pay model of the game is going to work, which, you know, was about 2,000 characters that could be summed up as it's like Hearthstone. and that, you know, you're like, you play the game, there's, you know, all sorts of crap you can do. I don't remember if they call them quests. I don't think they use the exact same verbiage to describe stuff, but it's basically, you know, daily stuff you do, challenges you unlock, you get coins, you use coins to buy packs. I think packs have 8 cards piece in them. One thing that people are really pissed about that I'm kind of shocked that anyone would be surprised by this is that you are not able to trade cards with other players, which I don't know why you would think that would be the case. Being a free-to-play card game, like what free-to-play card game allows you to transfer cards between players? So I don't know.
Chalk one up for physical cards.
Yeah, I guess.
Suck on that, digital.
Well, so that's kind of the most interesting thing, I think, that came of the news surrounding this game this week is that in New Zealand, they're testing, it's kind of interesting, they're soft launching a product. That's just kind of amazing to think about. That's the thing. But when you buy packs of the new Magic set, which is I have this somewhere in here and I really should know it, but I don't know, I felt like it was in Dominaria, or I don't know if that's how you pronounce it or not, but the new Magic set, when you open a pack of Magic cards, I think it's 15 cards, one land and one like usually just kind of like advertising some other thing, like you know, like pre-made decks or other crap in the Wizards ecosystem. So that remaining card is going to have a digital code on it that you can then claim in the game. And you have a 10% chance to get a free pack of digital cards and a 90% chance you get 100 gold and then 1 of 5 kind of like promo cards in the game that you can only get through using these codes.
That seems like kind of a cool idea.
Well, it's cool, but like, what's strange about it is that they're limiting this to 10 redemptions per account.
Oh, well, that's dumb then.
Which seems weird because I feel like, and you know, they're quick to point out, like, when you actually dig into this, that like they're testing the code redemption system, like absolutely nothing with this is final, and all that stuff, which makes sense. I mean, I can only imagine the logistics of that goes into like printing, packaging and shipping Magic cards and like all that other stuff. So like, I see why they put limits on it because you don't want, there's a lot of tricky crap going on between like balancing the economy of this game plus like the economy of the external kind of physical card game and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But I really just see this as like a massive value add. And I don't know why they wouldn't just give away the farm to people that want to buy physical cards, you know, like, giving away 100 coins or whatever is free.
Yeah, no, that seems like a good problem to have.
You know, so
people wanting to buy more of your cards.
Yeah, well, it's just kind of weird because I feel like a lot of the people that would be like hardcore enough to have a physical paper collection and be into this new digital version, like they're not just buying 10 packs, they're buying dozens of packs. I mean, when I used to play Magic competitively, like a new set would come out, I would buy like 3 or 4 boxes sometimes. I don't even remember how many packs are in a box, but that's like $300 worth of cards, maybe.
How do you feel about that money spent?
Well, so I not terrible because I can resell all those cards. And I have some cards that are worth like $100+ a piece.
Yeah.
But you know, they're
will
sitting.
Will you ever do that?
They're sitting in a box in a closet somewhere that I've since totally forgotten about. And
are they accruing interest?
I don't necessarily know if. Well, here, let's actually let me look real quick, and I'll tell you.
I have just a mind-boggling huge amount of Gundam models that I bought when I was super fascinated with building Gundam models back in the day. And I would go to like Japantown and San Francisco, where they would get crazy imported, exclusive, limited edition, blah blah blah, Gundam models. And if I went back and added up all the like retail value, or you know, the money I actually spent on those things back in the day, I'd probably want to blow my head off.
All right, so my among my big money cards, Jace the Mind Sculptor, Planeswalker card. I remember I opened two and I bought two on eBay for, I want to say, $40 a piece. They are now $123.41 average. So yeah, they are gaining interest. That's pretty good.
Nice. This is a good investment. That's more solid than Bitcoin.
Yeah, well, yeah, I guess, depending on when you bought Bitcoin. But yeah, I don't know. I'm super stoked for MTG Arena because I feel like for the longest time, like Magic has really fallen behind the other kind of digital card games that have like been nimble enough to like come out and just do stuff better. Because like the way that I look at it is like as big as a company as Blizzard is, like Hearthstone is a little tiny boat that can navigate very nimbly around, you know, because it's a you know, reasonably tight knit team that can do cool shit and all this other stuff. Whereas like Magic is a, I don't even know what, 30-year-old thing now, almost 30.
Yeah, and it's an institution.
Yeah, it's an institution with like just decades worth of cards you need to worry about balancing and playing together with multiple formats and multiple stores selling their product and like all this other stuff. So turning that kind of massive boat takes a lot of time. So it's not really surprising to me that MTG Arena has taken so long and still is in beta and stuff. So.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess we'll see. Still in closed beta. I don't know if they've announced when it's coming out of that, but it wouldn't surprise me if this is one of those things that just like stays in some weird form of beta for a very, very long time. But anyone that can play it like effectively can.
Yeah.
So the last thing I have on my list is we got the first trailer for the upcoming procedurally generated puzzle RPG, The Legend of Bumbo, which is from the creator of Binding of Isaac Rebirth. So if you haven't seen this game, basically looks like it's a match four kind of thing on the bottom. Like, what was the name of that game that Cappy made that so many people cloned? Hang on, I'll type with the world's loudest keyboard.
What are you?
Might and Magic.
Oh, yeah. I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. Is that just what it is? Might and Magic?
Puzzle no, RPG? I think it's there's something else.
I don't know. But yeah, that was a game where you know you match stuff and that interacted with kind of like the battleground kind of thing. This looks pretty similar. But what's neat about it is the art style is kind of like a cardboard diorama kind of Paper Mario looking sort of thing, which looks really neat. And yeah, I don't know. The no real news beyond that. Still kind of not sure how excited to get about this game because, like, these dudes, if there's one thing that these guys like doing, it's releasing trailers for games that never really materialize or...
I feel like I get bummed out that I'm so jaded, but I also feel like it's deserved because I've gotten so excited for so many... You know, things from like the Team Meat people.
Dude, it's like how many trailers did they put out for Mugenics? Like there was even like a song and stuff, you know, and they just kind of like got backburnered and they moved on to something else and all this other stuff. And I don't know what the risk of that happening with this is, but you know, like they're it's a small outfit and you know, I've seen him tweeting that like Super Meat Boy on the Switch is like selling better than it did on the Xbox.
Yeah.
So if you're a small studio and suddenly you have this massive influx of cash, you can basically do whatever you want. Like, how motivated are you to finish the projects you're working on? Like, I don't know what the answer to that is. Clash of Heroes is the name of the game I was thinking of, I believe. Right. Yeah. Clash of Heroes. That's what it was. Yeah. So let's see that's all I got for news this week. We can hop into, discussing some games. I think the biggest release of the week is Harry Potter Hogwarts Mystery.
Gosh, and everybody loves it. It's really, really been resonating with fans.
By Jam City. Well, dude, what was such a bummer with this is that, at least externally, like the people that we deal with at Jam City, like their marketing and PR people, like the people we talk to, super cool dudes. Like they sponsored our GDC party. Like they were great to work with on that. Like, I started organizing it and just kind of passed it off to them, and they just kind of killed it with organizing the rest of it. And, the Harry Potter IP is, just universally beloved, right?
Yeah.
And, so this seems like it should have just been a complete out of the park home run, right? But the problem is, the free to play elements of this game are really kind of unbelievable.
Probably the worst I've seen in a long time, maybe ever.
I mean,
it's bad.
Like this reminds me of like back in the day of like Facebook free to play games when like no one had really figured out like, the best way to build a free to play game that would limit people to make it fun for people to play for free, but also give you the ability to like buy some stuff or whatever. So a lot of them just had like these like super hard paywalls or energy walls or whatever else. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember getting weirdly into Zynga's Frontierville, which is kind of like the Oregon Trail follow-up to Farmville. Right. And like that game's energy system, I remember looking back on it being like, God, I don't know how anyone put up with that because it was so unbelievably terrible. Like you could have
How many friends did you spam to get energy refills? Because my mom was just notorious for that.
Well, so Frontierville came out after the initial Facebook crackdown on the friend spamming. So I believe I was limited to get more energy, but I definitely did remember talking people into just like, clicking to play the game so I could expand my stupid town or whatever. Because that was another way that they gated it. So that game, you would be in these situations where like you'd turn over a rock on your farm and there'd be like a snake on it or something like that, and you had to like kill the snake by hitting it with your shovel, but every hit, like every action you made in that game took a chunk away from your energy bar. So you could be like in the middle of a fight in Frontierville and just be like, all right, well, I guess I'll just come back later because I'm out of energy, or I can pay money and whatever. So I thought that kind of game design was behind us.
Yeah.
Because, it seems like everyone like universally agrees that these super hard paywalls and very rigid energy systems and all this other stuff, compared to just like allowing people to play your game and offering them like all sorts of interesting ways to be upsold, works way better.
Yeah.
Because like eventually you play a game enough where you're like, oh, well, you know what? Like, I like this. I've been playing this game for a long time. They're doing this promo thing where you get this bundle of stuff and it's $10. Like, yeah, sure. Like, let's do this kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like that's a great way to drive monetization in your game. But this game, it's like the monetization and energy system and all that stuff is so hardcore that like I've seen like friends of mine that have Harry Potter tattoos. Mm. Like that's how into Harry Potter they are. Like just angry and disenfranchised with this game from like hitting paywalls, like effectively in the tutorial and stuff.
Yeah. It's weird to me because these are people that have experience with making very popular free to play games. And so you'd think they would have a lot of idea of what to do right and what has worked before and kind of do, apply that to this game here. But it sort of just seems like they just, implemented what they thought is the best thing to do without like actually testing any of it. And now they're finding that it's not working out so well.
It's real bizarre because like the way that these kind of free-to-play companies always work is that like it's all super data driven.
Right? Yeah.
Like you don't do anything without soft launching and tweaking all your numbers and
super baffling that it came out the way that it did and that it's just so bad.
Yeah, I just can't really wrap my head around it because like this should have been like just the unbelievable slam dunk.
You would think so. But here's so right before we started recording, I've been following along with the thread in our forums, which has been a roller coaster of fun. Yeah. But so somebody actually posted a really interesting positive response about liking this Harry Potter game. So let me read this. This is from forum user Fring. Says, okay, all right, I'm totally loving this. Definitely don't come in thinking of this as a game. It's a visual Harry Potter novel with very fun graphics and good enough writing. I did not know I had a giant gaping Harry Potter size hole in my life, but I'm so glad I got to fill it. There's tons of ridiculous timers and it's stupid, but this is definitely a case of them needing timers to gate the content and give themselves time to continue building out content. Players who pay are going to regret it because they'll just end up waiting at some point in the future when there's little to nothing to do aside from level up friendships super slowly. And then he says he thinks that the biggest risk is that because it's a Tiny Co game, which I guess is that the actual developer in GM City?
Yeah, I guess so.
Or maybe he's, I don't even know. But anyway, it will eventually become very event heavy, like Avengers Academy or Simpsons Tapped Out, with minimal actual story progression. And if that's the case, they're going to delete it. But otherwise, I'm optimistic about its future and would absolutely recommend it. So a lot of times, I've told people this about free-to-play games in the past too, where I'm like, you know, like, I guess I've just been doing this long enough that if you go in with the right expectations, some of these things, you can really enjoy it if you like hold it right. You know what I mean? Yeah. Which I wish there was like a better expression, but I feel like if you know what you're going into and then you play the game that they want you to play, then you can have a good time and not have to pay like $1 million or whatever. And I think a lot of people downloaded this thinking, cool, a Harry Potter game, I'm going to just sit here and play this all day and beat it this weekend or something like that. And free-to-play games aren't meant like that. I mean, they're really games of services that hopefully will live on for months and years, and they can slowly, you know, trickle out new content at a steady pace and keep people engaged that way or whatever. And so, you know, I've had developers, lots of developers in the past tell me, you know, the energy thing that so many people hate is not a moneymaker at all. It's really to gate the content off so that you don't go through it so quickly, because you'd come to find that, you know, that free-to-play game that you've been playing every day for a year would have sucked ass if it was a $5 game that you beat in like an hour.
Yeah.
And so whether that's good or not good or whatever, I don't know. I mean, it depends on what kind of game you're wanting to play or what kind of gamer you are or whatever. Like I was saying on last week's podcast, I feel like there's room in my life for both types of games. I want to sit down and I want to play Audemars for 3 hours if I want, but I also want to pop into a free-to-play game and spend 30 seconds in it throughout the day or whatever. You know, like, I don't mind playing by their rules when it comes to certain free-to-play games, because it's entertaining me and I'm enjoying it. And I don't, if you don't have to pay money, then I'm not paying money. So I don't feel that's really a problem. But if you're going into it with the wrong expectations, you're going to get slapped in the head with a frying pan of this paywall.
Yeah.
And this really bad monetization implementation. So I don't know. I thought it was encouraging to hear someone just be like, you know what, this is a silly Harry Potter thing that I'm enjoying for what it is, and that's that, you know, without having to be like moan and groan the world.
Yeah, I actually had a lot of people ask me, like, oh, should I try this new Harry Potter game? And like that was kind of my response, is like, well, dude, I mean, like, I don't know why you wouldn't give it a try. It's free. Yeah, yeah. If you don't like it, you can delete it, but just like keep your expectations in check. It's a free-to-play right. game that is meant to be played for the lifetime of the game, not yeah. I'm gonna power through it this weekend and
yeah.
have a good time. You know, that being said, like, you know, the energy system I feel is absurd, but like the stuff you do in the game is actually pretty cool. Like if you're willing yeah. to put up with it, like, you know, you go through the whole process of, like, you know, getting your wand and going yeah. through Diagon Alley and then going into Hogwarts and like you know, just doing general like wizard stuff.
Yeah.
Which I think is pretty cool and like really well done for a video game, and like all this stuff is just how unbelievably jarring it is when it's like, you, because it's not like, like, I would understand if they gated it where it was like, you know, you're hitting these like very logical stopping points. It's like, all right, well, here's yeah. a timer, like you need to come back later mm-hmm. because, like, you know, you need
it's your bedtime character needs to go or whatever.
Yeah, 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 like something like
you
that.
You have to study, you know, before you can take the test. Yeah,
as opposed to like, oh, I'm out of energy, I like cannot turn the page of this book.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of thing, which is just like, yeah. what the, like, why of all the ways?
I mean, that's free to play design 101, though, is to, you know, you need to give a lot of leeway in the early goings of a game to get people an idea of what the game ultimately is going to be, what they're going to be in store for. to see if it's going to be something that they actually even want to stick with or whatever. And so you're putting way too much confidence in people when they hit a stopping point in 10 minutes to be thinking that they're going to come back later and really continue on with, you know, this tutorial for this game or whatever. Like, I feel like early goings, you know, give someone 30 minutes or an hour to just do whatever the hell they want and really kind of understand how the game works. And then when things start tightening up, you can kind of decide for yourself, well, I see where this is going to go and I don't like it, or okay, I get it now and I'm, you know, this is going to be my game that I, you know, check in every day or whatever.
I don't know. I just, it's what's baffling to me about it is that of all the IPs in the world that you could have basically an unlimited development budget on to just go absolutely hog wild with building like a absolute god tier world class game. Like what other IPs are there out there that other than Harry Potter?
Yeah.
You know?
And you know what's sad is I keep thinking about this ever since this game was announced, actually, but I was just like, take Bully, skin it with Harry Potter, you have an awesome Harry Potter game.
Like, yeah. Yeah, no, for real.
You're going to school, you're going to classes, you're taking tests, like everything that Bully did so awesome so long ago, but just with a Harry Potter and Hogwarts spin, and you're a student there or whatever, and you can make that a premium game, and this could be its, you know, sort of silly spin-off mobile tie-in or something like that. But they haven't done that.
I just do not understand. Like, it just seems so silly to me the way that the direction this went. Because, like, this game more or less, like, is that. It's just through a point-and-click kind of adventure sort of thing, you know? And it's just,
I also heard somebody compare it to the Kim Kardashian Hollywood game where, you know, if you're an up-and-coming celebrity that wants to be friends with Kim, blah, 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 you're sort of doing the same thing, but you're a student at Hogwarts.
Yeah.
And that sort of made sense to me, too. Like, when you think of, like, you know, the kind of audience maybe they're looking to hit with this. But I don't know.
It's just like, I don't know. It just sucks that people got so amped up for this. And it makes sense because there's so few Harry Potter games. I mean, like, you have these, like, you know, the games that went along with the movies, basically. And then, like, the Lego Harry Potter games.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah.
You know?
Dude, reskin Bully. So easy.
So, yeah. I don't know. So, Harry Potter Hogwarts Mystery, my final verdict on it is, try it out, but keep your expectations in check so you're not disappointed. Like, know what you're getting in for, and you might enjoy it more than just people expecting it to be like the next Harry Potter movie in video game form, I guess. So Paladin Strike finally came out this week. I think you've played way more of this game than I have.
I was super into it during the soft launch for a brief period, and then I kind of haven't been playing lately. But this sort of came out of nowhere with no sort of warning, and I thought that was strange. And I only noticed it because I got an update for the soft launch version and noticed it was in the U.S. store. So they didn't send out any sort of blast until today. The release date is actually next week. So this is one of those fun things that we run into in the mobile world all the time, especially when it's something from, you know, an established console or PC developer. Next week is what they want the launch date to be, even though the game is out right now. So officially it's next week.
But that's because they're doing like some weird tie-in with the console stuff that's not out yet.
And coordinating all that stuff together, it's got to be a nightmare. And so, you know, it is what it is. And it's not like, I mean, I think it would probably be a bigger deal if this was like a game nobody had seen before and it was this big surprise thing that they were waiting to unleash and it came out a week early. But this is a game that's been in soft launch. It's been easy to play for a long time now.
Well, haven't they like been slowly expanding the scope of the soft launch to the point where it's like, unless you're in like the top 10 markets, you can basically just download the game for like months now?
Maybe. I mean, I know they expanded it, but I don't know if it was that much. But it's. I mean, it's been in all the usual hotspot soft launch countries. So.
Because that's always the silliest to me is like when we get hit with like these weird embargoes when a game's already out and it's like, oh, by the way, it's also been released across like 87% of the iTunes regions anyway for months.
Get that a lot.
So what's the rundown if you've never heard of this game before? You have no idea what Paladin Strike is. How about no ideas what Paladins even is?
If you didn't know what Paladins is, it's a first-person shooter, like a class-based, sort of like Overwatch first-person shooter. And it's got a pretty popular community. We went to the, you know, national or international championships or whatever it was back in January. And
High Res Expo.
Yeah, the High Res Expo. And so It's definitely got like a pretty heavy esports presence. It's not like the Dota 2s or the League of Legends that you hear about all the time, but it's out there. It's known, and it's one of the bigger games that people play, you know, competitively and stuff. And so what they've done is they've taken Paladins, you know, on console and PC. It's a first-person shooter. They've taken all the same characters, all the, you know, different classes, and they've sort of shrunk it down for mobile. And it's sort of a hybrid of like a dual stick shooter with a MOBA. So there's sort of like some MOBA stuff happening, but it's not strictly a MOBA. I feel like I'm doing a bad job explaining this, but it's more like action based, I guess. And for me, when I was playing the soft launch version, there's some team based stuff, which is sort of just capture point kind of game modes. But then there's a deathmatch mode where it's just shoot everybody. And that, I liked the deathmatch a lot. Like, I feel like, for the longest time, there used to be, more and more like a top-down shooter with online multiplayer for mobile. I feel like it's such a money sort of game idea that's never been done super right yet.
Yeah.
And, this, I feel like when you're playing the deathmatch of Paladin Strike, that feels like what that should be to me. And so I never really jumped into the team-based stuff too much. But other than that, it's kind of like it's a free-to-play game. It's got all the normal sort of, you know, collecting characters and upgrading them and gotcha stuff. And I don't know. It's not overly, you know, aggressive. It's not Harry Potter, Hogwarts Mystery or anything. But, yeah, it's super fun. Like, I would like to jump back into it now that it's out for real or, you know, about to be or whatever. The problem I had is that I my game progress syncing
let's do a rundown of that.
When I downloaded the soft launch version and it pops up and you got to log in, and you can either make a high res account or you can use like Facebook or Game Center, I think.
So did you never log in on the soft launch version?
Well, no. So there's a there's also a link, because it's a game that's also on Xbox or whatever. You can use your Xbox Live login. And so when the soft launch came out, I was like, oh, well, I don't really feel like making yet another new account. I'll use my Xbox Live stuff or whatever. And, you know, that stuff will, I think there's some cross-platform stuff that might happen if you play the mobile game and play the console game, whatever. So, so I did that, and I was able to log in using my Xbox Live login. And that's how I played the whole entire soft launch. And so when this new version came out, there wasn't really an option for that. And so I started looking through my email history, and apparently at some point I did make a high-res login or whatever, a high-res account, but it doesn't remember my email address as having an account, so I couldn't recover anything or whatever. So long story short is I got screwed out of all the progress that I got in the soft launch version. I'll have to double-check. Maybe they wiped it anyway and it wouldn't matter, but I also don't get to keep my old gamer tag, which kind of bothers me. I don't know, that whole thing, I spent like a good hour just dicking around with login account stuff, and I got to the point where it just soured me on even wanting to play.
Yeah.
I feel a little bit better now that a day has passed, but I do want to jump back into it. I guess I'll have to start anew. I wasn't super far or anything, but it's still kind of annoying.
Well, it still sucks to lose those unlocks. I mean, like, have you emailed the support people?
Are they telling you to pound sand? Could. They probably helped me out, but I was so fed up with it the other day. I was like, I just don't even care. But I will dive back into it. I think it's a cool game. I think people that even don't know what Paladins are or don't like MOBAs will like it.
It's kind of like a shootery feel to it. So like, if you're not into like the fantasy MOBA, you might like this one.
It's I think the cool thing about it is that all the character classes feel so different from each other, and they all have really cool like you know, offensive abilities and stuff like that. And so once you really learn how each character works, you can kind of find the person that suits you best. And that really varies things up a lot, as opposed to like a game where everyone's got a gun and there's different types of guns, but everyone's just shooting each other.
Yeah.
This is like, there's a lot more interesting stuff going on because there is sort of like a fantasy aspect to it or whatever. It's not like a military thing.
Yeah. And if you play the Paladins game, like, you know, all the characters and like and their abilities and all that stuff, which is kind of cool.
Yeah,
like the Paladins first person shooter.
They know all the abilities from the console game, like translate to the mobile game the same, like the grenade guy is still the grenade guy or whatever, the grenade king. So
yeah,
super cool. I would definitely check it out for free. Paladin Strike. I'm curious to see how it'll do and how much it will get support through Hi-Rez, because it's actually a game that was built by a third-party studio, not Hi-Rez directly. And so I think that's sort of interesting. And I'm just curious, like, if it doesn't, I don't know what they're expecting from it. And if it doesn't do well or become maybe like a super competitive, you know, community game like their other ones are, if they're really going to keep, you know, supporting it or whatever. But
right.
It's cool, though. It's worth checking out if you like top-down shooters and stuff like that.
Hmm. Well, yeah, so the last game I had on my list I want to talk about was Supertype, which is by Camibox, right? Which is the same guys that made Pancake the Game, right?
Yeah, one dude, Philip Stollemeyer. We actually got to meet him at GDC this year, and he's super cool.
Yeah.
And, yeah, he also made Sometimes You Die and, gosh, so many games. But, I mean, Pancake the Game is obviously his...
I think that's my favorite.
He's the resistance. And so, yeah, I posted this trailer when it was upcoming, and it's kind of interesting. It was like a... It's a physics puzzler based on letters, so it's not a word game.
Well, so the way it works is like there's like a set level on like, so imagine like your screen like split into like two thirds, right? And on the top third is like an area that you can type text into, and the bottom two thirds is like some kind of game area, like any kind of, just imagine like any sort of like physics puzzler sort of thing. It kind of reminds me of Zip Zap. Right, that game with the little erector set piece that you bounce back and forth.
Also by this guy.
Yeah. Imagine like that sort of level and like the bottom two thirds, but the way you solve it is by coming up with what you type on the top, that then like falls down into the game world, and you want a letter to hit every square that's kind of like positioned around. So it's really sort of clever because like it makes you like it uses, I mean, like everyone, I hope everyone would know the alphabet that's listening to this. But so, you know, all those shapes really well. And this game kind of puts you in the spot where you're thinking like, all right, well, I need something that'll like roll for a little bit and then like flip over on itself and stop. So like maybe that's like a G that you use for that particular thing, or like, oh, well, this like, so in the early game, it's like, there's a really narrow channel that you need to fall down. It's like, oh, well, you just need an L for that, and that'll fall right down the middle of it. And like, the rest of the game kind of persists like that, which I think is really cool, because everything has a solution that, but potentially more solutions than just like the one that you use. Like, if there is one thing that I wish this game had, it was like, it would be like after you complete a level, it would tell you like how many percent of the people that solve that level use that solution.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's kind of the way the physics engine is like, you could just use some weird shaped letters to get the job done. And it might be like a 1 in a million chance that it even works or whatever. And so I think that's the coolest thing about it, is like figuring out how to go about solving things. And, I saw somebody, I don't remember if it was on Twitter or the forums or something, but, someone was like, I'm having fun with the game. I'm exclusively using like profanity to beat every level or whatever. And so like they like sort of gamified their own, you know, the game by just using curse words to beat all the levels. I thought that was funny.
Yeah, but it's cool because like as you play it, like there'll be a bunch of levels where you need to like knock a letter a certain way or whatever. And it, like it's weird because like you start... At least I started playing by like trying to like make like coherent words to solve the puzzle, right? But then after a while, it was like, well, the words don't matter. Like, and like Q is my go-to if I need to knock something to the left, and G is my go-to if I need to knock something to the right, and kind of thing. Yeah. So it's like you're using letters to almost like have a language of movement, which is kind of an interesting sort of spin on this whole physics puzzle.
If you detach your knowledge of letters and what they mean, because our brains are weird and they look at letters and they make words and we read them and we understand them as that thing only.
Right.
But if you just detach that and you look at them as shapes, that makes, you know, the game makes a lot more sense because you're looking for the proper shape to do what you want it to do inside the physics engine. And I don't know. It's just like very subtly genius.
Yeah. For sure. I don't
know.
Like
all this dude's games.
Yeah, really, really like there's... So just look for Camibox on the App Store. Kamibox, right? That's how you spell it? And really just download everything. I mean,
yeah, buy them all.
Yeah, like Pancake the Game is, I would say, my favorite just because it's so stupid. But yeah. But all of them are really good, including this new one, Super Type. So yeah. Definitely check it out. So with that, I think we're going to put a pin in this particular episode of the podcast. So thank you very much for listening. If you want to send us an email to get read on the podcast, it's podcast@toucharcade.com. If you like the show, you like the website, like the stuff we do, there's two ways you can support us. It's patreon.com/toucharcade, or you can do your Amazon shopping through toucharcade.com/Amazon. Friendly tip for anyone that's into Amazon and has Amazon Prime, you should re-up your membership soon because they are increasing the fee associated with Amazon Prime from $99 to $119, and I think that hits on the 1st of May. Here, let me see.
You know, still worth it at that price. but if you can get it for cheaper. So the people that pay what it is now are locked in at that, right?
No.
Oh, so it goes up for
everyone. Yeah. Which, I like, so there's two... Well, there's three types of people in the world right now. People that are super pissed that it's getting more expensive, which I feel like you make a lot of good arguments about. Because, like, for me, like, I really only care about getting, like, the shipping stuff. Because, like, I buy as much as I can through Amazon because it's just really nice to be able to have all your purchase history somewhere, not need to deal with receipts. Like so, like, perfect example, like, I have this automatic cat feeder thing, and I was like, well, shit, I don't even know where the manual is to, like, figure out how to, like, change the time on this. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'll just type in cat feeder in my Amazon search history, and it gives me, like, comes right up, model number. I just type that into Google, and, like, good to go. You know, like, that kind of stuff's super easy. But, like, I don't really care about the Amazon Music or the video and stuff. So, like, you know, it's, I wish I could just pay for the pieces itself, but I see why they bundle it together. So if people are pissed, it's more expensive. People that don't care and people who just won't notice.
Yeah.
Because it's just on auto renew and it's like, I don't know, that's a, you know, a charge from Amazon, sure, whatever.
I think I probably fall into all three categories.
Let's see. Starting May 11th. So consider this your warning. If you, so another thing you can do that I read someone say is that if you, you can kind of cheat it for 2 years at the $99 price by resubscribing now. Or before May 11th, and then gifting yourself a another year, and you can set the date that goes out. Like, so the idea being, like, you know, if I was going to send it to you on your birthday, like, I can go in and be like, oh, send Jared Amazon Prime on Jared's birthday, and, like, you get an email and stuff. So, like, you do that, send it to yourself, like, a couple days before your next re-up, and it's locked in for that. Like, because it's just a, like, gift card code that gets sent, you know.
Wow.
So
that's some next level saving $20 right there.
And if you do that, do it through toucharcade.com/Amazon because I think you get an extra bonus for Prime signups. But I don't care if you have Prime or not, really. We got a really cool Discord at discord.gg/toucharcade, a Twitch channel at twitch.tv/toucharcade. If you like this podcast, please give us an iTunes review. Otherwise, we will catch you next week on another episode of the Touch Arcade Show.